This is the Paranormal Podcast with Jim Harrell.
Welcome to another edition of the Paranormal Podcast. I'm Jim Harrell. We're talking to the author of Lore of the Ghost, the origins of the most famous ghost stories throughout the world. And the man I speak of is Brian Houghton. Brian is a qualified archaeologist and researcher with an interest in the strange and unusual. He is author of Hidden History, Lost Civilizations, Secret Knowledge, and Ancient Mysteries, and Haunted Spaces, Sacred Places, and webmaster of MysteriousPeople.com, devoted to the lives of enigmatic people. He has written on the subjects of ancient mysteries and the folklore of the supernatural for a variety of print and internet publications, including the BBC's Legacies website, Doorways Magazine, New Dawn Awareness, and Paranormal Magazine in the UK. Brian is located currently in Greece. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
So, obviously, much of your profession is wrapped up in the paranormal. How did you get involved? What drew you to this subject matter?
Well, I wouldn't say paranormal. It's more the folklore of the supernatural that I write about. I guess my introduction to this kind of stuff was probably from reading English ghost stories, kind of early 20th century M.R. James stories and some Victorian ghost stories as well. And also some of the TV shows from the 70s and 80s, like Leonard Nimoy's In Search Of series and Arthur C. Clarke's Mysterious World. Those things, really.
It's interesting because those things continue when I talk to authors. Regardless of their take on all of this, there's that common thread they used to watch In Search Of. That was me as a young person. Mysterious People by Arthur C. Clarke, certainly. So I think we all kind of share that line. It's very interesting. Now, you kind of, usually we kind of take it, or we talk to people who are more kind of what I would call true believers many times. Your take is a little bit different. What is your take on the supernatural?
I approach it from the point of view of folklore, sometimes of urban legend as well. Mainly because that's what I'm interested in, and I think the more I researched, especially when I was doing Haunted Spaces, Sacred Places, the folklore and the mysteries connected with places like Stonehenge and some of the sites in America as well were so similar. The modern mysteries were so similar to the kind of folklore from centuries before. I thought what's seen as perhaps a paranormal event now, 100, 200 years ago, would have been folklore. And I think a lot of the books that you get, say, especially regional books about ghosts and stuff like that, the stories in them are very similar to folklore. So if you had, for example, a book, I don't know, The Ghosts of New York, for example, you'd probably find the same stories in a 19th century book, perhaps entitled The Folklore of New York. You'd have almost the same stories, which makes me pretty suspicious as the reality of the sightings, I guess.
Now, in terms of folklore, let's go into your book here. You give a wide range of different events and different kind of chapters. And how are these stories the same? How are they different as you go through different societies, different time periods of time as well?
Are we talking about Lore of the Ghost now?
In general, I noticed in your book you will talk about how one particular phenomena will repeat itself. Can you talk about the fact that it'll repeat itself and how it might differ from culture to culture?
Yeah, well, in terms of the folklore of ghosts, I think there are, for example, phantom white ladies is a very common sort of motif of ghost lore. And I think in some countries, England is a good example, she is often seen as a murder victim or something like that. Perhaps a 19th, 18th century murder victim that comes back to haunt a certain spot. And in other, perhaps Spain or Italy, Catholic countries, she might be seen. The same thing might be interpreted as a saint. And in other cultures, she might be seen as an angel, but it's the same thing. But the interpretations are different. And I think it's the same with, for example, ghostly black dogs, another common motif in folklore, quite common in England, but it can be a death omen. In other countries, it can be a ghost of a pet. It really depends. So I think depending on how the culture is made up, how religious the culture is or something, it changes the way these motifs are interpreted.
Here's a question for you. Now, there's possibly two ways of looking at this. Do you think these are kind of like an archetypical story that is told one certain way, and then it is just retold in other cultures with the ornamentation of that particular culture interjected in? Or is there also the alternate possibility that these apparitions present themselves to different people in different ways because they know that that is the way, the framework from which they view the world? You see what I'm saying?
I do. I would disagree with the second point.
Okay.
I don't think that's true. But again, I wouldn't say every single strange sighting of a misty figure at night is folklore and has no reality. I think a lot of them are. But I don't. I think that you don't need to credit the apparition with the intelligence to change the perception of who's seeing it. I don't think that's happening at all.
Okay.
I think that the culture itself does this, and I think the more you look into the history of ghosts, especially in England in the 16th, 15th century, they're interpreted as the devil, as in a very religious context, and that's almost disappeared now, certainly in England and in America, I think. So I think as the culture changes, the perceptions of the supernatural change as well. I don't think it's anything to do with the apparitions. It's just the way they reflect. I think the supernatural is a good reflection of the way society is going and the way it thinks. And in this context, it has a social function, I think. It is kind of like a story, but that's not to say every single thing, every apparition, every unexplained event is a story or is folklore. But I think the main explanation for them would be that they're a story that adapts, that the culture adapts to fit its needs.
And that actually ties in nicely to something I ask most people, and I hate to be repetitive, but I think it's a question well worth asking. Why do you think we're seeing the recent uptick in interest in the supernatural?
I guess it reflects perhaps a lack of belief in established religion. I think that's probably one explanation. And I think in the past, say during the both World Wars, there was a huge increase in reports of supernatural occurrences. So I think it's perhaps when society as a whole feels in danger, or that the established religions and beliefs are not attractive enough, then new ones or old ones are reinvented to cope with that need, I think.
And it's interesting how you talk about how, you know, what we're seeing today is to some extent mirrored in past culture, kind of the everything that is old is new again thought. So, I mean, really, how much do you see that? I mean, how similar are the things that we see in here today to things that folks were writing and talking about 200 and 300 years ago?
I think they're exactly the same. It's just that they're descriptions are different. You know, I suppose a good example is the poltergeist phenomenon. I think that the poltergeist is a fairly new word. I think it was coined in the mid 19th century, And it's become really popular, especially with movies now. And I think that is something you think, well, that must be a modern thing, but it's only the name, really, that's modern. Stories of objects being thrown around the house, people being thrown out of bed, you know, a couple of thousand years old. And at one stage, I kind of thought, well, this must show that they must be based on some kind of real event, but I don't think that's it. What happens is that certain motifs reappear down the centuries, and it's not because they're real and they're experienced. It's because it's the way people dealt with certain things. If the church, for example, wanted to show unbelievers there was an afterlife, and what happened after there was something after death, then ghosts, poltergeists, were an ideal thing, because if a person was shown to be, their spirit was shown to be around and still there after their death, then they would use this to show, well, hey, yes, there's an afterlife, look, people see ghosts. So I think that the motives behind reports of ghosts are almost the whole explanation of apparitions, I think.
So would it be fair to say that, for example, let's take that case that you just talked about, poltergeists, that the stories in essence are made up out of whole cloth? Is that a fair statement?
I'd say there are probably more than one explanation. I mean, I'm certain that a lot of them are hoaxed for publicity or whatever other reason. I'm sure there are one or two that can't be explained, perhaps. But it's suspicious that the motif, the throwing around of things, the writings on the wall, the pulling people out of bed, goes back so far, and it originally appeared in a religious context. It makes me very suspicious that there was a reason that certain actions were written down. And like I said, I don't think it's because they occurred. I think it's because they were being used by the church or by whoever to put a point across.
Well, after we get back from this break, we're going to talk to Brian Moore specifically about some of the chapters in this fascinating book. And it is very interesting to see the historic evolution of stories of the supernatural. And we'll talk to Brian Moore about it after this on the Paranormal Podcast. Hey, I just wanted to say thanks so much for some of the great reviews you've been putting up on iTunes. Still quite a bit short of that leading skeptical podcast, but I know we're going to catch him. And I just thought I'd read some of the ones that we've gotten. They're fantastic. One here, excellent podcast, 5 stars. Jim Harrell provides an open-minded approach to the paranormal in a well-polished professional manner. By far tops in paranormal podcasts. Another one here, I love this one. I've been listening to the Paranormal Podcast for about 2 weeks now, and I cannot put my iPod down. I subscribe to other shows about paranormal information, and I find yours is the best. Keep up the great work. Here's a good one. Yeah, he told me to write a review, so that's what I'm going to do. Definitely one of the best podcasts out there on any subject. Jim Harrell is a marvelous host and always asks the right questions. Well, thanks so much for the kind thoughts, and we really do appreciate it, and we think it will help us get the word out to more and more people. And please tell your friends, connect with us on Twitter, MySpace, and at paranormalpodcast@gmail.com. Now, if you want to put in your iTunes review, but not been quite sure how to do it, there's help. Go to paranormalpodcast.com, scroll down actually below this show, and you will see a little instruction on how to submit a review to iTunes and a link that will open up your iTunes music software and put you right where you need to be. And with that, back to the show, and thanks again.
Back to the Paranormal Podcast with Jim Harrell.
Welcome back to the Paranormal Podcast. I am Jim Harrell. Thanks so much for joining us. I did want to say a note. I see those reviews at iTunes increasing, and I'd like to thank you very much for that. Things are going well. Our downloads are definitely up. Our uploads are up as well. We're putting out more and more shows, particularly for this Halloween season, and we hope that you're enjoying them. And we know we're enjoying this one with Brian Houghton. We're talking to him about his new book, Lore of the Ghosts, The Origins of the Most Famous Ghost Stories Throughout the World. And since we're on the subject of the book. Brian, let's go in and talk about some of the various chapters, because it is interesting how you map things out. Tell us a little bit about Ghosts of the Famous. That's chapter 4 in your book.
In this chapter, I really included a couple of different categories, and I think in England, for example, the Ghosts of the Famous really means the kings and queens, especially the wives of Henry VIII. They seem to have the most appearances, and a lot of them are centred around the Tower of London. And I think this is where, specifically about these ghosts, royal ghosts, it really is very difficult to separate the folklore from the actual tales, and I think from the actual supposed sightings, rather. And I think a lot of the stories from the Tower of London are a good example of ghosts appearing who died violent deaths, and this is, you find it for hundreds and hundreds of years in ghost lore, that people who were executed or were murdered were often thought or expected almost to come back as a ghost because of their violent death. I guess because people couldn't believe they were here one minute, violently killed, executed or whatever, and then gone the next. And it was just not believed that they couldn't still be around. So especially with the English queens, especially of the 15th, 16th century, there are a lot of reports, stories of these ghosts coming back headless, or, you know, as they were in life, or as they were after they executed. So they're kind of quite a lot. They take up quite a lot of the ghost lore of England. In America, it tends to be, there's a couple of ghosts of presidents. I think Abraham Lincoln has been cited a few times around the White House in the 19th and 20th century. But apart from a couple of ghosts of the presidents, I think the ghosts of the famous in the States are kind of centered around movie stars. So you've got Marilyn Monroe, I think, Montgomery Clift.
Gene Harlow, I think you mentioned.
Gene Harlow, that's a real odd one, because it's, she died, I think she was 26 when she died, and she had a husband,
Paul Byrne,
Paul
was it?
Paul Byrne, yeah, the MGM guy. And he committed suicide, or was murdered. I think some people believe he was murdered. So this is really their classic material for ghosts, a murder and an early death. And indeed, their ghosts have been reported. And I think the house they shared, I think Sharon Tate later stayed at, and she was later murdered at by Charles Manson's gang. So this is kind of par for the course. These kind of sudden deaths, not just in the 20th, 21st century, but hundreds of years ago, almost automatically seem to result in ghost sightings. And certainly, I don't think there's much reality behind it. I think it's almost that people can't, especially with movie stars, they just don't want to let go. And
it's a coping mechanism, is what you think? A coping.
I think they're trying to cope with the loss, as individuals who report seeing these movie stars, but also I think society as well. It kind of has this reaction that famous people who die, they kind of automatically generate these stories to kind of, as they have done for hundreds of years. It's an automatic response almost. And this is apart from the hotels and various inns that just promote stories of ghosts of famous just for basically for the tourist dollar. And I think there's a lot of that going on, especially now with all the ghost tours and ghost holidays. I think this is a big thing now. So especially ghosts that originate from hotels now, I'd be very suspicious of, because, you know, you can sell more to tourists if you say this room has a ghost.
Along with the mini bar, your own personal ghost.
Yeah.
Another chapter that, and I'm trying to really focus on some things that maybe we haven't covered on the show, Visions of the Dying, Crisis Apparitions. That seemed like a fascinating topic to me.
Yeah. These kind of crisis apparitions were became very a big part of ghost investigations of the paranormal in the 19th century, especially in England. Basically, what they are is an apparition of a dead or a dying person who appears to a close friend or relative, but they could be, you know, thousands of miles away, and the relative will say, or the friend will say, they had a vision of a person, I think there may be something wrong, and then this person may turn out to have been dead or dying at the time of the apparition, which investigators in the 19th century was thought was very good proof of the existence of the afterlife. But I think the more you investigate these cases, the more it seems obvious that when the cases were written down, I think afterwards the times were either changed or left out, so it's not clear if the person already knew their relative was dead after they had the vision, and it was kind of some subconscious reaction to it, or in fact, you know, they couldn't possibly have known, and how did they have this vision? This is what some of the investigators were saying. So I'm not saying that, you know, no one has an odd feeling when a friend or relative is ill thousands of miles away, but I don't think it is what some investigators thought of as definite proof of the afterlife, because it was never really proved that the sighting or the vision they had occurred, you know, days before the death or by accident or whatever of the person involved. So it's kind of, I guess there's not that much folklore involved in this. This is more of a kind of a psychic for psychic investigators. But yes, it was a big thing in the 19th century, and I think it's still investigated now. It's kind of held up as proof of the afterlife by a lot of people.
And maybe a corollary to that is, and I don't believe I saw it in the book, many times when people are on their deathbed, they will speak of seeing loved ones, or, you know, I've heard tales of people saying, pull my feet out of the fire, you know, those kind of things. Yeah. Have you ever done any research on those kind of tales?
No, I haven't. I mean, it's just hard to know what's going through people's minds in times of these kind of crises. So I wouldn't like to, say it happens or it doesn't. It's very hard to know.
I think many of us have had the experience of somebody saying, gee, I saw you across town and you were doing thus and such, and you personally have no knowledge of it, and kind of make an aside or a joke. I just had it happen to me the other day, saying, that must be my evil twin.
Yeah.
In Chapter 7, you talk about tales of doppelgangers and bilocation. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, this chapter really involves, I guess, two kinds of phenomenon. It's the double, I guess. You have an apparition of a person who occasionally is seen beside the living person or in the same building, who obviously cannot possibly be there. And I think the classic case of this is, in the 19th century, a French school teacher who was teaching at a girls' school, I think it was the 1840s, and it was said by her pupils that they would see her teaching in the classroom, and then one or two of them would look out the window, and they'd also see her in the garden of the school walking around. And apparently this happened on a number of occasions. They could see her in two places at the same time, or even, I think, when she was eating dinner, her double was standing next to her. And you know, on first looking at this, it sounds a brilliant case of the paranormal. But as I looked into this case, I realized that the only source for the case was one of the pupils at the school, or said she was one of the pupils at the school, who wrote it down many, many years after, and then it was published in a book called Footfalls on the Boundary of Another World in 1859, I think. So the problem is in that case, it's a very famous case, it's not great evidence, you know. It's just one person's evidence. Another is that, a person is seen where they're not, as you mentioned. So a person might, you know, be in their house asleep and someone might see them in town walking around the shops or something. This is actually a very well-known folklore motif, and it goes back hundreds of years, you know, in the depths of folklore, really. And it's kind of like the evil twin thing you say. It was thought of as kind of the shadow of a person walking round. And I think it's, I don't know what the reality behind it is, but it originates as a motif in folklore. Whether there's any reality behind it, I don't know.
In my case, I just think it was somebody who happened to look a lot like me. I'm not going to assign mine to the supernatural, but it is interesting because I think we've all had that experience. And we'll just round out with a couple more before we wrap. Time slips and spectral buildings. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Again, the classic time slip case is the two English ladies in France at the beginning of the 20th century who were walking around the Palace of Versailles, and suddenly they claim to have gone back in time to the time of Marie Antoinette, so, you know, the late 18th century, and apparently they saw people and buildings that could only have existed in the time of the French Revolution, the end of the 18th century. Again, on the face of it, it looks fascinating. It looks like they may have slipped in time. But by the time they published this book, and I think this is one of the arguments against it, they'd had time to research what they said was there, because one of the initial arguments was that they couldn't have known the details of French Revolution, Versailles, at this time, so they must have seen it. But the book wasn't published until 1911, I think. So they'd had many years to research what it could have been like. Not to say they faked it, but they may have believed, they saw something that had only existed hundreds of years earlier. And one of, one of the ladies also had a similar experience. I think it was in Oxford in England that she saw the past. So I think this may be a very subjective, may have been a very subjective experience. On other occasions, there was kind of, particularly in the southwest of England, in Dartmoor, people have seen houses or cottages that looked unusual in the landscape, and they've gone back perhaps a year later, and this house was not there and had never been there in the place, they said. So whether these people actually saw a ghost cottage, or whether they were just disoriented and didn't know the area very well, because most of the people were new to the area that would see these things, I don't know, but it seems more likely that they were lost and weren't where they thought they were than that they saw some kind of, building from centuries before.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. We really do appreciate it. And it is a fascinating take on the supernatural. And I will say this to our listeners. You know, I think our kind of Clarion's call for this show is to be carefully open-minded. And I think when we're carefully open-minded about the paranormal and the supernatural, it behooves us to be open-minded maybe to theories that explain some of these phenomena, is folklore possibly, or other very real-world explanations. So keeping an open mind goes both ways, and that's why we wanted to have Brian on today. Brian, what else do you have coming up in the future? What are some of the projects you're working on going forward?
Well, Law of the Ghost has just come out, and I'm promoting that over the next couple of months, and I have a collection of I haven't got a publisher, but I've got a collection of kind of supernatural short stories that I'm going to try and get together and try and get published. So that's going to be occupying me for the next couple of months, I think.
And what is the weather like this time of the year in Greece?
In Greece, it's still pretty warm. It was roasting a couple of weeks ago. It was still in the mid-30s. Now it's about 25, 26. So we have more sun than anywhere else in Europe, and it lasts for about, we have hot weather probably 6 months of the year.
It has to be a beautiful setting. If folks want to know more about Brian Houghton, what is your website or websites, and how would they learn more?
Yeah. My main website, I've just finished creating it, is brianhoughton.com. That's brian-houghton.com. So you can contact me via that. You can have a look at my books, what books I've written, have a look at sample chapters, other articles I've written, and also order the books from there. I also have a MySpace page. That's myspace-brianhoughton, where you can find out a bit more about me. I don't know what music I like, what films I like, stuff like that. That's more of a kind of personal interests site than MySpace.
And we thank you very much for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me. Thanks a lot.
And thank you for listening. Brian has a MySpace page. We also have a MySpace page, so please check that out. You can find that and the link to our Twitter page at paranormalpodcast.com. Please always feel free to send us emails at paranormalpodcast@gmail.com. We try to respond to them all. And also, please don't forget to put in those iTunes reviews. We think it's raising our profile. The download numbers are increasing, and we appreciate all your help. Until next time, this is Jim Harold. You've been listening to The Paranormal Podcast, and have a great night. Bye-bye.